Let's face it, life is hard. You know what I mean. You want to win at work, but you're struggling to survive at home. You want to make your wife happy, but you have your own personal demons you have to battle with every single day. Trying to provide for your family financially, and at the same time, not knowing exactly how to protect and lead them spiritually. But do you know the only thing that's harder than trying to succeed as a man? Is when you're trying to do it alone. That's why at Real Men Connect, we're offering to do life with you. We have a unique and private program called the Real Men 300 that's designed to help you win at what matters most to you. Like having a personal relationship with God, having a stronger marriage, leading your family well, winning and living your God-given purpose at work, and leaving a legacy that will matter in eternity. In the Real Men 300, we promise you three things. One, you will never have to do life alone again. Two, you won't ever get left behind, no matter how much you're struggling. And three, not only will you learn how to win as a man, you'll learn how to lead other men to victory as well. Guaranteed. However, you can't just join the Real Men 300. You have to apply because we screen every man and space is limited in this private and exclusive brotherhood. So to find out more and to see if you qualify, just go to realmen300.com. Because life's not easy, but it can get better when you choose to do it together with men you can trust, who won't judge you, but will hold you accountable and encourage you as a man. So apply today at realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And today we have with us Dr. Matt Rawlings. And Dr. Rawlings is a CEO of a consulting company in Singapore, where he's doing this broadcast from right now, and he lives there. He works closely with leaders and their organizations to address the tension that exists in the midst of a changing world. And Matt is a prolific author and has written more than 16 books about leadership. In one of his books, Walking Naked into the Land of Uncertainty, Five Keys for Leadership into the Unknown, caught our attention at Real Men Connect, and that's why we asked him to be on the show today. And Dr. Rawlings has spent over 20 years working in missions in Asia and in the Pacific, where he submerged himself in different cultures and worked with people from a variety of diverse backgrounds. He has made it a priority to help people understand who they are in God and how to express him in whatever challenging situation their faith finds them in. He found that if people can prepare for those moments of great uncertainty, then they can offer the very best of who they are instead of reacting out of fear. Amen. And Matt was so inspired to study this particular dynamic in leadership that he pursued and completed his PhD in leadership and communication from the University of Wales. And currently he splits his time between working with churches and mission agencies and consulting with large corporations on how to lead their companies forward in the midst of a rapidly changing world. Dr. Rawlings has been happily married to his wife, Celia, for 36 years, and they have one son. So please welcome Dr. Rawlings to the show today as he shares with us how we as leaders can be fully present in the midst of tension. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you, Joe.
And Matt, we have a major time difference, and we were joking about it before we came on the air. It's 7 in the morning here because this show is not live. So when they listen to this, it's probably a week or two when it airs. But yeah. When they listen to it, they you're at what? It's 8, you say, at your time?
Yeah, it's 8 at night. So we're just about the other side of the world from you. So yeah, it's a bit of a different world.
Yeah, it's 7 a.m. on the East Coast here in the United States. And so, guys, you hear my passion in my voice. I'm not even a morning person, and I'm still excited about having Matt on the show this early in the morning. So, Matt, I'm excited, man, because the topic is so interesting to me. And I can't wait to hear us to discuss this. But before we get right into the topic, Matt, if you don't mind, we always ask our guests to share with us their favorite Bible verse. That it could be an anchor verse for their life or in this season in their life that gives them inspiration from the Word of God. What's yours, man?
Can't say that I have one particularly just because I love the Word and I love to spend time on it. But I was thinking that in Him was the life and the life was the light of men. And I think when I fell in love with Jesus, this sense of falling in love with life, falling in love with who He is and how to engage Him. Yeah, in Him is life. Life is, you know, He is the life. So that's really kind of when I was 20 and fell in love with God, that's been kind of a lifelong verse is to try to figure out how to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength.
You know, and that's great. Do you know the reference for that? Because I've heard that scripture before. Do you remember the reference for that?
I don't off the top of my head. That's the worst part. I'm reading and memorizing the ideas and then they're gone.
Hey, I understand. I understand. You know, what I'll probably do is see if I can look it up myself and then we'll maybe add it to the show notes as well so they can look at that. Because that's a great Bible verse. You know, now, man, I got to tell you, I've been on your website. I've been digging through your stuff, reading and skimming through your book, Walking Naked into the Land of Uncertainty. And tell us a little bit about your journey. Before we get into that, tell us about your journey into this aspect of leadership and studying how leaders respond in the midst of uncertainty. Why this particular area of leadership? What kind of led you to this?
Yeah, good question, Joe. When I was 20, I joined a group called Youth with a Mission. And I did an outreach that was supposed to be just a short outreach to a little island called Saipan. And that ended up being about 10 years of missions work. I'd grown up in the U.S., so I was very much kind of one-dimensional in my culture. You know, I was an American. I just thought everything was just kind of one-dimensional American. Then I went overseas and I realized that there was a whole different world out there. And I remember one time, it's kind of funny, I was sitting on a bench, short story, and little Chamorro boy was sitting next to me, and I was 21 at this time, and I was trying to grow a mustache because, you know, facial hair makes a man, and I'm trying with all my heart to grow this mustache to be a man. And this little Chamorro boy, he's probably, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10 years old. He's sitting there, and the Chamorros are not hairy people at all, and he's got his finger, and he's rubbing it across my lip, and he's going, oh, like I'm some kind of a freak. And I'm thinking, and here I am in America, I'm growing hair, I'm a man, and here I am in Saipan, I'm growing hair and I'm a freak. And then it just kind of strikes me, what does it mean to be a man? What is it, you know, what is it? Because so I realized then it was kind of, I didn't have the language for it, but it opened up the door to uncertainty. So, you know, I've lived and worked in many different cultures in the last 15 years here in Singapore. And this realization that cultures are different, but people are similar. And so what is it about this, that people and uncertainty and, because I deal with it all the time, and I'm always out of my comfort zone. So that was kind of the gist of it. You know, I can remember being in Hong Kong, and I was going down the streets and playing basketball, and of course they invite me out to the street at night to eat with them, and who knows, you know, whether they put pig's feet or pig's intestines or something on the plate, and then they kind of put it before you with kind of a sheepish grin and go, are you going to eat it? And you're confronted with this uncertainty. You know, you go to the Philippines and they have this boiled duck or chicken balut, and then, but it's just before the chicken is born, they boil it and then they peel it back, and there's this egg that you eat that the Filipinos love. And you know, these different situations and scenarios, and you're like, okay, how do you deal with uncertainty? Because I'm confronted with it all the time. And lo and behold, I realize that a lot of people right now, right here in Asia, we're dealing with this new coronavirus. So it's a whole unknown situation. So it seems to be common for us, but it's something that I was just kind of confronted with. And I thought, well, I better understand how to do this, because it seems to be God's put me in this place where I don't know what to do. And I'm not sure how to live and be involved in this.
You know what, Matt, I'm always fascinated when I talk to our guests. I grew up in Miami, Florida. And to kind of tell you how sheltered my life was, I didn't meet a white child till I was 12. And I didn't know we had South Beach in Miami until I went off to college. And so I'm hearing these stories you're sharing about when you were young and you're going meeting different cultures. I want to know, how did that happen? How did you get outside of where you were born and raised to be international like that, to even get to another country?
Yeah.
What kind of family did you grow up in?
Well, I probably, you know, good old WASP, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Grew up on the West Coast, born in California, raised in Oregon, youngest of three kids. Grew up playing sports, just, for lack of a better word, typically arrogant, one-dimensional, and thinking the world should evolve around me. And a very dangerous thing happened to me, and that was when I fell in love with God. I remember crying one time, and the words that came out of my mouth were, "I'm so lonely, I'm so lonely." And it wasn't really until that point that I realized that the issue wasn't outside of me, the issue was inside of me, and that I was alone, and I didn't know what love was. And when I fell in love with God, I thought, okay, I want to follow God. I want to do what God wants me to do. And one of the guys said, "Hey, Matt, why don't you come to Saipan with me, and we'll do some missions work there." And I thought, cool, because I knew I couldn't go home, because I didn't want to go back to the mundane, to the normal, to the, you know, one-dimensional. And so I went out there, and as I said, that's what got me started on this journey. I had no, absolutely zero longing to be a missionary. I just loved God, and I wanted to follow him and figure out where he'd take me. And it's been quite a journey, I have to say.
So tell us a little bit about your parents, because especially since we're dealing with men all the time, I'm always trying to find out their relationship with their fathers and with their mothers, but specifically the fathers. And so obviously you fell in love with God, but tell me, what was the home environment like?
Well, Dad was a workaholic. He's the youngest of 10 kids, 9 boys. And he, you know, he was a dirt poor redneck out of Oklahoma, just absolutely. And so we were an insecure family. And the way they competed, they competed with sports. And so that was all my dad knew. He went back to school, in his own words, to prove he was somebody. And so a lot of my childhood, he was just gone most of the time, just because he was so busy trying to prove himself. And mom just stayed home and took care of us. So, my dad's 91 now. I have a great relationship, even from Singapore. I call him once or twice a week. I love him. And he's still, he loves God and he's doing some great stuff. But it's been a journey to try to figure out, what does it mean to be a man? That's a great question. But with Dad and the dynamics of that, and then even with me, with my son, trying to, because you adopt some of the things that your dad gives to you unconsciously. You just kind of pick those things up, and I just picked up that competitive prove yourself, and my son got it. So I've had to continue to work with some things with him, and trying to figure out what does it mean to be a man and to love and to be open and to be vulnerable. And so it's a ongoing challenge.
I had a guest on our show recently, and he was talking about how he wrote a book, he runs a ministry called The Father's Blessing. And which he blesses men who have had father wounds. And he said something that was very interesting. He says, when he asked men, tell me about your dad, he says, men typically get defensive. "Oh, no, we're good. Man, we have a great relationship." And he says, he'll hear that. And I said, "What's defensive about that?" He says, "Well, what they're saying is they have a great relationship with their dad. Like, you have one with your dad now. I have one with my dad now." Yeah. And even though we had a rough beginning. And he says, they immediately go to how good the relationship is now. He says, but Joe, what I find out is that's great. He says, but they don't acknowledge the pain that was caused then. So we're past it, but we don't realize. And you just mentioned it about how even with your son now, so you see some of it coming back out. And he would say is that when we do that, it's because we're in great relationship with our dads now, good relationship. But we didn't address the wounds that were caused. I mean, great insight. I mean, it just blew my mind when he started talking about that. And it made sense that when I received the blessing of the father, I broke down crying years after I had long forgiven my dad. And I'm thinking, where's these tears coming from? And what it was, I never addressed those wounds from the past, and acknowledged it, even though I had gotten past it. So, but thanks for sharing. But I always like to get the backstory, because it's great seeing a great man of God and the work that we're doing now. But I know there's a story behind it. And I think what people can relate to more is not what we're doing now, because most people can't relate to having a podcast or doing what you're doing all over the world. But what they can relate to is where we started and what we started with and how we were raised. So thanks for sharing that, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Now let's get into this. I'm excited, man, to talk to you about this because the topic of uncertainty and change can stress us out. And I know this may sound crazy, but you talk about how we can prepare for uncertainty. But my question is, how do you prepare for uncertainty if you don't know what to prepare for? Isn't that the inherent nature of uncertainty that we can't prepare for it? So I would know, how do we do that?
Well, that's a good question. And in one sense, you answered it earlier is by going back and dealing with who you are and what you kind of inherited from life with your family and the different things. I love Genesis, and I really love I love hanging out in Genesis because I think it's a great point. So the first point of uncertainty that we're confronted with as a Bible is Adam and Eve confronted with God when he shows up into the garden. And we can see right at that very point what he's uncertain about is relationship and who he is. He's really as much afraid of himself as he is of God. Mm-hmm. And so the uncertainty begins right at that moment. And it's interesting, the first question that God asked Adam is, where are you? So the he's hiding. And uncertainty scares us. And anything that scares us, we go into a hiding mode. So this, I mean, in one sense, it's not complicated because the principle that I work from is you're the only certainty that you bring into the future. There is no other certainty. And if you're not there, you're not going into the future. If you're going into the future, you're bringing yourself, your gifts, your strengths, your weakness, your brokenness. You're bringing those things. And that's the only thing. That's it. That's the only thing you can be certain of. And so part of the certainty is to be aware of how to be present in the midst of uncertainty, even in the smaller way. So he's faithful in the small things, will be faithful in big things. So it's learning to be faithful. It's learning, in the simplest language, is to be present in the smaller uncertainties. And really it deals with tension. And I often work with and deal with tension and frame it around a point of tension, that if we can learn to deal with tension and be present in the midst of tension, we won't be afraid of uncertainty because uncertainty has nothing to do. It can't hurt us because we're already walking in the midst of tension. So those are the dynamics that I'm trying to work with people on in their leadership and in their, just in their humanity.
You know, but Matt, we hear that a lot about being fully present. You talk about it in your book, being fully present. Yeah. But what does that really look like? Give us in practical terms what that looks like, us showing up fully present, because we hear it as advice all the time. Yeah. But what does that look like to a man?
I'll tell you a story. Mm-hmm. I've been 10 years in missions, and we'd gone back. So I was just got back to the U.S., and I was going for a run. So I was running down the road, and there was two people walking up the road that I knew, and I was running towards them. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, ah, crap, I don't want to stop and ruin a good run. So what I did is I turned around and ran the other way. So I literally just wanted to avoid them. And what I realized after I turned and ran, I had this kind of divine sense. And if I could put it into words, it would have sounded like this: Matt, you're not running from them, you're running from yourself. Hmm. And what I realized was the problem wasn't outside of me, as in those two people walking up the road. The problem was inside of me. I wouldn't either face the disappointing them by running past them or, you know what I mean, confront myself
right.
in that midst. So it was a deeper honesty and a vulnerability. And for the first time in my life, I realized that the problem wasn't out there. It was within me. And to be fully present is to own what is in me. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And as I do that, then I can begin to engage and work through that. So to be fully present is just to intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, physically own the dynamics of what is going on inside of me in those situations and realize that they're not making me something. They're just revealing something that's going on inside of me.
Wow, man, that is good, man. That's great. I love the way you explained that, because I wrote down in my notes here when you said that is when being fully present is not hiding who you are when you're in front of that person.
Yeah,
it's not, like you said, not running for yourself. What a great story of a great mental picture you don't run away from yourself, you know, or from them. Be there, be present. Now, you mentioned, you alluded to the question about God is asking, where are you? And I saw in your book, you mentioned that there's three questions. That was one of them where are you? Break that down a little bit more, because in the book, you explained a little bit deeper than that. When you say, where are you? Yeah. Go back to that and explain why that question is so important to us as men when it comes to dealing with uncertainty.
Well, so we're in Genesis. Adam and Eve are there. They've rebelled. They've eaten the fruit, rebelled from God. And God comes in. So this is the first situation, and you can frame it in a variety of different ways. This is the first father dealing with his kids. This is the first kids that are rebellious. This is the first conflict situation. This is the first teacher teaching his students. This is the first man dealing with another man. This is the first interpersonal, you can frame it in a variety of different ways. And the essence of it is God comes in, and you got to love this. I mean, anybody listening to this should just spend hours, maybe years, hanging out in Genesis, because it's got such a rich story to tell us. But the essence of it is that there is this first conflict. Adam and Eve have this conflict, and God comes into it. And notice the principle. God comes in person. He doesn't send someone else, and he's fully present. So he shows up.
Right.
So the first thing he does is show up. And then the only being in the universe who doesn't have to ask questions. Now, that ought to just blow your mind, because he's the only one who doesn't have to ask questions. And the first thing he does is he asks questions. And so we know that these questions are important, because he's modeling to us as a man, how do you deal with conflict? And which is show up, be fully present, and ask questions. Mm-hmm. Because what you want to do is create a safe place so that the other people can be invited into and work with you in this process. And he asks three questions. And the first question he asks is, where are you? Which is a question of context. If someone's lost and they call you up, and the first question they ask, or if they say, I want to come to your house, what's the first question you ask?
Yeah, what do you
live? Where are you? Because you can't give them directions until you know where they are. Mm-hmm. So the first question presets, there's a context to it. And then the second questions you ask is, who told you? Which is a question of authority. And as you alluded to the family, authority is a huge question. And so God's trying to clarify, who are you listening to? Because who you're listening to is going to define who you are. And it's interesting that this is the only question that Adam and Eve don't answer. Adam doesn't. So it says, who told you that you were naked? And you should hear a long silence. Nothing. And then he goes, okay, you're not going to answer that question, so let me ask you the third question. And then he says, have you eaten? Which then becomes personal responsibility. And it's interesting to me, the personal responsibility isn't dealt with until the third question. Until you get a context of who is God and what is life and who are we and where are we, until you get an understanding of biblical basis for authority and who has what authority and who you should be listening to, personal responsibility is irrelevant. And so he gets that third question, and then, Adam blames God, the woman you gave to me. So here he comes, and he becomes, he blames God as the evil in the universe, and then Eve blames the devil. So you get bad theology and bad spiritual warfare right from the very beginning that confuses people to this day, oftentimes in that process. So you see all that in Genesis, and it's just right there as God tells us the story about mankind and our struggle with owning our lives, owning our choices, who are we listening to, and understanding what is reality.
And it's great because I know a lot of people have studied in Genesis, but you're absolutely right. I've done a lot of quiet time studies in Genesis, and I'm like, well, God, I've read this like a million times, but yet I see something different in it every single time in these little subtleties. Like when you broke that down in your book and I saw that, I'm like, wow, I never saw it that way. And what was most interesting to me is what you just said too. I'm like, wow, God didn't ask them about responsibility until the third question. But then it makes sense if we have any children ourselves, we want to know, where are you? What are you doing? Who told you that? Okay, why'd you do that? We're going to see if the responsibility question usually comes later.
That's right. That's right. Make sense because, we don't do that usually. We think, I'll just make my kids responsible. But their responsibility is rooted in funny ideas about authority and reality. Mm-hmm. And until you clear up those, responsibility isn't going to mean anything.
Man, I want you to, it was something subtle that you mentioned in your book that I thought was interesting. You said that vulnerability is needed for our journey into unknown. Why is that so important to be vulnerable in order to go into the unknown?
Well, one of my books, I break down humility. So humility, Andrew Murray talks about humility. He says there's three aspects to humility: creation, sinner, and saint. Because I work in the workplace, I can't use religious language. So I use three different words. So I use finite or limited, broken, and gifted. So there's three expressions to humility, and vulnerability is embracing that I am intrinsically vulnerable, weak because I'm created. I'm broken, which means I need help, and I have a gift, which means I have something to be able to offer people. And all three of those are expressions of humility. And that's what we get grace for. The Bible says God gives grace to the humble. So we get grace, and vulnerability is simply going, I have these three expressions going on in my life at any given time. I have a limited piece. I don't know, and it's okay. I have a broken piece. I'm trying to hide, or the old man. And I've got a gifted piece where I've got a unique expression of God within me, so that my voice matters in whatever relationship I'm in.
You mentioned that the subtitle of your book is Five Keys of Leadership into the Unknown. Yeah. And yeah. I wanted to see if you could for us break down those five keys. And as you go through them and you kind of give us an overview of them, I'll like to unpack some of them as you share with us, if you don't mind. So can you take us through the keys, those five keys?
Yeah. So first one is inquiry. So it's okay not to know. The second one is defensive. So with the freedom of choice that God has given to us, with being made in his image, we have the delegated authority to defend ourselves. We have the capacity to say no to God in the negative sense. And in the positive sense, we have the freedom to say yes to God. So defensiveness, or in psychological terms, we would call it healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. The next one I use is the word namer, which I use the word namer versus communication, because there's a specific that I'm working with in it. But in essence, it's communication, that we have the ability to create with our words. And then the values, that the language of the heart, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So it's organizing and orchestrating our values and aligning them up with God. And then the four of those come together to tie into being fully present. So the fruit of the four of them is the fifth one, being fully present, when all of those are at work in us. And then being fully present in such a way that other people feel welcomed into a relationship with us.
Okay, now let's start with, what do you think that men struggle with the most, based on your experience in working with organizations as well as working with individuals themselves, when it comes to those five keys?
Good question. And here's part of my challenge. Because I work with both men and women, because I work with so many cultures, I don't honestly think gender. I don't think male versus female. I just think human. So I think this is what humans struggle with. Humans struggle to show up. And if men have a sense that we struggle with on the control side, so our defensiveness becomes control. We stop communicating, and we don't deal with emotions, which means we shut down those three areas. Women become manipulative. You know, men seek power. Women tend to be manipulative. Women will tend to over-communicate and become more emotional. So it's at a human level, of course, generalities are generally true, but you'll have both spectrums in both genders going on all the time. So some men will talk too much. Some men won't talk at all. You know, but as a general rule, men will become controlling. They'll shut down their communication, and then they won't deal with the emotions.
No, I want to dig into the key that you mentioned about defensive, because when you said that, I wrote down the word, and you said it as I was writing down boundaries. Why is that so challenging for us when it comes to that key about setting boundaries?
Well, and the challenge for us with boundaries is we've got to have boundaries, because if you don't know where you end and someone else begins, you can't have a relationship with them, because it then begins to morph. And a virus is bad because a virus has no boundaries, and it tends to want to take over all other boundaries and destroy life. And so what we need, and what the gift, and why it's really important for people to see that first and foremost of all, it's a gift, is God gave us this ability to defend ourselves. Eve should have said to the serpent, no. And you think, well, why didn't God intervene? Because he delegated her the ability to defend herself, which she had to learn at that time. So this healthy sense of boundaries that Adam and Eve, you know, Adam should have said to Eve when she turned to him and gave him the fruit after she'd eaten, he should have said no, because that was his delegated responsibility. And that boundaries that we have keeps us from being victims. It keeps us from being codependent. It keeps us from all kinds of loose and ugly relationships that can get us into trouble.
You know, I guess it was Henry Cloud and Townsend. They wrote the book on boundaries, which is an excellent book. And I remember one of the things they mentioned in their book about when we see boundaries, that it's not just about keeping things out, but it's knowing what to let in.
Yeah, you
know?
That's right.
And you're right that if we don't, that, you know, we're setting ourselves up for failure to a lot of other attacks from the enemy if we don't have clear boundaries. You also mentioned the key three in your book was the power of words, in which you called here a namer. As far as, could you elaborate a little bit more on that about how we create with our words?
Yeah. So God takes the most powerful thing in the universe, which is his spoken word. So God speaks and he creates the universe. And what he does is he takes the breath, which is the potential, unfinished potential. So the breath is an unfinished potential in the word of God. So when God activates his will, he creates out of nothing. So he takes his potential and he doesn't speak us into existence. He breathes us into existence. So he breathed his breath into us and we have this unfinished potential within us. And the first thing Adam does is to name the world. So the way we finish the world is by naming it. And until you understand the power of naming, that we define our relationships by the names we give to things. So I'll give you an example. So when I was in the first grade, I took they gave an IQ test, and on this test, my score was borderline mentally retarded. So in street language, we'd call that stupid. So the question is, do I accept the name stupid? And if I accept the name stupid, then that's how I treat myself, because names define relationships. So what we don't realize is communication is a creative ability. It's not a fixed reality. It's an interpreted reality. And so Adam's job was to name the world, to finish creation by naming it. And so, you know, life and death is in the power of the tongue, like a bridle in a horse's mouth, like the rudder on a ship. James talks about it. So this sense that our tongues have the ability to define our relationships, because they create the language out of which we will enter into a sharing of our lives. And if we can do that, then the relationship can be healthy. But if our language is not rooted in an understanding of that, then we can destroy people. And we do.
You know, Matt, what fascinates me is that we hear about it in church all the time. You wrote about it in your book and it's written in so many other books about the power of the tongue. There's life and death in the tongue. And so we hear it all the time. Why do you think we as humans, not just men, are so flippant with it if it could be that important?
Yeah, well, I'm just working on a devotion this morning because I write devotions, and I don't think we really understand what it means to be made in the image of God. I don't think we want to be like God. I don't think we want to be able to be little mini creators. I don't. Mm-hmm. We have no reference point to the power and the authority. Our problem is, and you know, our struggle with God is not that he doesn't love us enough. Is we don't want to be loved as much as he loves us.
Wow.
And you know, that just makes life complicated, because we're supposed to be like him and we're not. And then we don't even know what that means. So our struggle is our heart is supposed to be connected to the words. Out of the mouth, the heart speaks. Mm-hmm. And to speak from your heart requires a vulnerability. And to be vulnerable in a broken world is terrifying. And we don't want that, because we don't want to need God that much to protect us, to heal us, to walk with us through this process. So we'd rather just pretend like our words don't matter and just keep shallow, cheap relationships.
You know, man, I can see why you're so intrigued with this topic and why you decided to study it. But at the same time, and I guess I'm not trying to be cynical, but studying a topic like this and then interacting with people, that could become very frustrating when you see people, quote, don't get it, when they don't get it. That I want to know, how do you deal with knowing what you know, but then seeing people struggle with it so much and you can't get them to kind of see it? Because, I mean, you're enlightening me just by some of the things you're sharing. Does that get frustrating? How do you deal with it?
Well, what I have to do is I have to go back and I go, if you think we're frustrated, how do you think God feels?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So here he is, sovereign being in the universe, knows all things, and we won't listen to him. Mm. So I just go back and I think, well, God, this helps me to understand you more, because if I struggle with this, then I can be comforted because you struggle with it far more than me. I mean, here they put Jesus to death because he spoke words to them. So he understands this pain. and he's not afraid of it. And if he, what it does is it deepens my relationship with him. You're very perceptive to catch that, because it's not many people would, but it is frustrating to know things that other people don't want to know, but we all do in all of our strengths. Right. But what it does is it forced me to go back to God and say, God, you deal with this pain all the time. If you have the grace for it in your life, then I need you to give me a little bit of that grace in my life, because you don't judge me for not knowing something. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can't judge others for not knowing something. And I can almost hear some people say, yeah, well, that's nice for, you know, religious relationships, but what about in the real world? Right. And let me just remind people, I live in the real world. So I was just in a government offices today working with a group of political leaders that have, to be honest, I don't even know if they were Christian or not, because that's not the basis. Mm-hmm. But working to build relationships and working to engage them in a learning group to share and to listen and to engage at a more vulnerable level. So I'm not buying it. If anybody's out there going, yeah, that's nice for these religious people, but I'm not buying it, because I live it, I struggle with it, I'm engaged with it on a daily basis with people that I have no idea what they're, you know, they come from a whole spectrum of backgrounds.
You know, when people say, yeah, in the real world, I like the way you just put that. We're all living in the real world. We're just operating it. And it depends on how you choose to operate. You know, and I'm glad I asked you that question, Matt, because as a ministry leader, I get frustrated when I know that what could, you know, set them free from bondage or whatever, and it struggled. But I like the way you phrase it, because it really helped and blessed me, that changing your perspective, that it makes you more dependent on God and understanding and deepening your relationship with God. I never looked at it that way, but I think what a great way, a great paradigm shift to look at. And I'm saying that to all the ministry leaders out there who say, how come they just won't get it? The question is, how come we just won't get it? How does God deal with us when we won't get it?
That's right, man.
Now, we know we're already, I can't believe the time is going by so fast, but, and I still got a couple of questions I want to ask you before we jump into the man up questions, but there was something I saw in your book that I thought was interesting, and I'm going to let you explain it, and I'm not going to give it away, but you mentioned that day you just dealt with, you know, government agency and everything. So you do a lot of workshops and trainings for leaders, and you mentioned about how you ask a question about, how do you feel when you are confronted with a situation in work or relationships where you have to say, I don't know? Instead, when you have to approach leaders. Can you share what happens when you do that, when you approach these leaders? You say, how do you respond in a situation or work relationship or even in a relationship when the answer is, I don't know? Because that's kind of a scary place for us to go as men when we don't know and we're expected to know. Tell us the story about what you do with that in workshops.
Well, you know, it's right. The funny thing is, honestly, I spend half a day just trying to convince people that it's okay not to know.
So I've got half a day doing that.
I do, because I've got videos. I show them videos. I show them research. I show them all kinds of stuff. And the way I start is I go, when I don't know something, I feel, and I have a list of words, emotional words, and about 80, 90% of them are awkward, afraid, terrified, scared, uncomfortable. And they go through this list. Mm-hmm. And then, so I set them up and I say, okay, this is how you feel. And then we do an exercise and I help them to see that it's okay not to know. And then I say, we realize that we're finite and we don't know. And yet we feel awkward when we don't know. So who's wrong in this process?
Right.
And I try to get them to be aware of the feelings that go on in this process. Because one of the things that terrifies is about uncertainty is the unknown. And once I become comfortable with the unknown, that it's okay, that, then it's okay. Then I don't have anything to fear in that process. I'm not sure I answered your question, because to be honest, I don't remember.
I just wanted you to share what happens, because I wish I could be there to watch the dynamic. you kind of answered in the first few seconds when you say half the day you're trying to convince them it's okay not to know.
And that's the reason
I want you to share it, because I know from working with men and mentoring, discipling, coaching men, that boy, when we don't have an answer, we start hiding, like you said, they're running away. We don't become fully present because we don't want to be exposed that we're ABT, ain't been taught. We don't know any better. We don't know the answer to that question. It reminded me when I saw that, because I said, man, I would love to be in that room when you're asking those leaders that, because you said most of their answers are negative responses. You say angry, alone, stupid, worried, fearful, upset, disturbed, all these things, which we know if you're walking in those emotions, you're not in a good place to be able to be helpful to anybody. And I got to share this with you, Matt, a funny story, which I just thought of when you were sharing that. When my son was about maybe, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years old. He's an adult now. And my background is in education. All right. Before I came into men's ministry full time. And so my son, you know, when kids are that young, they're precocious. They're asking a million questions. So my son one day just comes up to me and says, "Daddy, can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure." He says, "I want to know." He said, "You're a teacher, right?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "And you teach big kids." I taught college students. I was a professor.
Yeah.
He said, "You teach big kids, right?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "And didn't you say you taught little kids too?" I used to be an elementary school teacher. He said, "Yeah."
Yeah.
He said, "So you're a teacher?" I said, "Yeah, Kendall. What's the point? What's your question?" He says, "So if you're a teacher, how come I ask you questions you always say, 'I don't know'?" and I got to tell you, Matt, when he asked, when he said that, I did feel stupid. Right? Age is like, wow, he's thinking his dad doesn't know anything. That was really a teacher. And then I said, "No, Kendall." I said, "No, dad doesn't know everything." Yeah. And I said, "And it's okay." I said, "But Kendall, that's when we don't know, what do we do?" He says, "Daddy, you said we should go look it up and go find the answer." I said, "That's what we do. We go find the truth. We go find the answer." I said, "What do you want me to do? Tell you, you know, not tell you the truth that I don't know?" and I didn't realize until you brought it up that, man, I didn't realize even my, I guess God can use people in different ways. I was being fully present with my son, not to try to make an excuse for not knowing, letting him know it was okay not to know. So yeah, you did answer the question, because I want men just to know it's okay. If your wife asks you what's going on, you don't have the answer to it, or you're in a situation that you don't know how you guys can get out of it. But isn't it great to know that when we don't know the answer, we have a father we can go to for the answer?
That's right.
That's amazing. Well said. That's awesome.
That's right.
You know, Matt, it's we're going short on time. I thought I may have another question I could squeeze in there. You know what? I'm going to get one more question in before we go to the man of
all right.
You know, based on your experience and what in talking about this topic of uncertainty and change and all the time, if there was one takeaway you want our listeners, you know, you're talking to men now, that you would want, if you could only get to say, if you don't remember anything about this topic, about this issue, what would be the one thing you want them to remember and take away from our conversation today?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the first thing that comes to me is learn to own your life, learn to own your feelings, learn to own what's going on inside of you, because that's what you have to give people. And getting comfortable in your own skin is perhaps the greatest gift we can give as we cooperate with the Holy Spirit to walk into things, is learning to be comfortable in our own skin. And, you know, your wife really wants you to share at a deeper level. She wants you to share all those things that are going on inside. So if you'll just own what's going on inside in that process and learn to lean into tension and be present in the midst of it, half of your conflicts will go away. Half of the things that you're running from will take on a completely and radically new perspective, because look, when you're running away from something, it looks completely different than you're walking towards it. And then learning to lean into God and say, "Okay, God, I'm going to face my fears. I'm going to face those things that terrify me, because you are in me. And if you are in me, the greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world. And I've got to be able to do this." So that's kind of the first thought that comes to my mind.
Matt, that is great. I'm glad that you did share that, because what if Adam would have followed that advice?
Different world.
Yeah. You know, and I think about something my wife said, and you mentioned about the wife, and I thought that was, you know, it's amazing the stuff you're sharing. My wife made a statement to me one time when I was really in a weak place. And she said, "Do you realize that you're strongest to me when you're at your weakest?" And I didn't get it initially. You know, I'm a dude, but I didn't get it initially. Like, what are you talking about? And she said, "No, when you're able to share what's going on inside of you and what you're struggling with," she said, "it shows me your strength and who you're depending on for it."
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, what a great way of putting it, that And yeah. the Bible said it best that, you know, is that when we're at our weakest, he is made strong. And so why are we running away from our vulnerability? And you covered that.
Yeah, really well today. That's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks. Now, you know, it's time, Matt, for our infamous okay. man of questions, man, which I'm sure right. Lauren, our project manager, told you about. And all they yeah. are five quick questions, starting with the letters M-A-N-U-P. And Matt, all they require is your fearless honesty. And I don't think you have a problem with that. So the only question is, are you ready, man?
Sure.
All right. And we'll be right back after this short break with my guest, Dr. Matt Rawlings. Hey, Mighty Warrior. Whenever I travel across the country speaking and teaching at men's conferences, I'm often asked, Joe, what do you do for a living? And I usually respond by saying, I simply help Christian men win. I tell them that I provide them with a proven five-step plan that's guaranteed to help any Christian man succeed in the areas that matter most to him as a man, like loving God, being the hero of his home, being a champion at work, protecting and providing for his family, and leaving a legacy of faith for his children and his grandchildren. And I tell them that the men who come through our organization walk away better equipped and more confident to win in the battles that they fight every day as men. Now you can imagine the response I usually get is, what is that proven five-step plan? And I tell them we provide a free training on our website. All they have to do is go to rmcfree.com to gain access to it. That's it. So if you like to find out the five critical things that every Christian man needs to succeed, guaranteed, then just go over to rmcfree.com to get the training. That's rmcfree.com. Welcome back, Mighty Warriors. I'm with my guest, Dr. Matt Rawlings, who is the author. Well, he's the author of 16 books, but one of his books, Walking Naked into the Land of Uncertainty, Five Keys for Leadership into the Unknown. And he's been blessing us by sharing us how to deal with change, how to deal with uncertainty, how to deal with tension in our lives by being fully present. And so he's going to be fully present as he answers and addresses these five questions. So, Matt, let's start with the first one. Then the first one starts with the letter M, and it stands for mistake.
Yeah.
What mistake do you think you make personally when it comes to being fully present or dealing with uncertainty? What's been one of the biggest mistakes you have made?
Well, the biggest mistake I make is I shut down and I hide and I go into control mode. And and the constant challenge for me is not to do that, is to I'll tell myself, okay, I got to put my big boy pants on and not hide and step up and walk into this thing. And that's what gets me into trouble more times than not.
Mm-hmm. And I think I may already know the answer to that A, but I'm going to let you, maybe you might go off in a different direction. The A represents attitude. If there was an attitude that you could change in men, I know, again, you work with men and women, but if there's an attitude you could change in men, when it comes to this dealing with uncertainty, dealing with tension in their lives and being fully present, what would be the attitude you would change in the hearts of men that you see?
Well, I think in simplest terms, I'd say understand what true humility is and then learn to walk into it.
So humility and learn it and how to walk into that and be okay.
Yeah, a biblical basis for humanity. Not there's a whole lot of people who have funny ideas about humility, but a biblical basis for humility. And then walking into it so that I know I'm finite. It's okay not to know. I'm broken. There's a grace and I have something to contribute. I have a voice in this process. And if we could humble ourselves and walk into that, I think it would make a huge difference.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how we do misconstrue the word humility? We think it's deflecting praise, but really it's about understanding yourself and realizing that you don't have to control, you don't have to be out front, you don't have to be the best, you don't have to compete, that God is giving you certain unique gifts and talents and abilities, and it's okay for you not to know to be weak and to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so, I'm glad you clarified that, because I think we have this misconception of what humility is, at least in today's society. Now, Matt, the N stands for next, and you're doing a lot of things, you're doing some consulting, you're writing a lot, but what would be the next big thing you would do for God in this particular area if you knew you couldn't fail?
Well, this is sometimes I struggle with these questions because I think I'm already living on the edge. I'm trying to do it. For me to walk in and be vulnerable with a group of government officials and to invite them into a space, And I never know what they're going to say. And I'm not in control of the conversation. And I'm trying to be vulnerable with them. I feel that fear all the time, where I have to say, okay, God, you got to come into this, because I don't know what's going to happen with these mm-hmm. people. And I'm not in charge of this conversation. And if you don't show up, then I'm in trouble. So for better or for worse, I feel that all the time. And I think, okay, God, if you don't help me, because my ministry is helping people have difficult conversations, both at a leadership, executive coaching, or at a team level. And so when I walk into those situations, I'm thinking, if you don't show up, God, I'm going to fail, and it's not going to be pretty. And it's, you know, so yeah, when I walk into those situations where I honestly don't know what's going to happen, and I just have to trust God in me and say, okay, we're going to do this, God, and it's going to be okay. I think mm-hmm. that's really the big thing for me.
You know, now, man, I'm breaking man up question protocol with this, because I'm just curious, because you are in a unique situation dealing with some of these, your clients, and dealing with these corporations. Yeah. What prompts them to bring you in the first place?
Well, you know, the fun part is the most basic, if you know, the last 20 years, kind of the most basic leadership issue for any leader in an organization is the speed of change. So mm-hmm. the constant everybody's talking about is the only change is, you know, the only certainty is change.
It's change, right.
And so where I've kind of specialized and honed in my message is around tension. So they know they have to deal with tension. They know they have to deal with uncertainty, but they don't know how. And so my role is to come in and help them, and to give leaders in the church a biblical basis, or in the marketplace, a language to be able to understand tension and uncertainty. And so they know they need help. They just don't know what to do about it. And so that's where, because they know they need to deal with tension, because it's probably the primary issue that tensions. I mean, again, the virus going around Asia right now, the tension levels are incredible. Yeah. When I go into work, I've got to have my temperature taken twice a day because the fever is a part of that. So all of these dynamics that are happening, going on around us, require a phenomenal level of tension. So what we've got to do is go, okay, God, you're in the midst of tension. Tension is just an opportunity. I'm not afraid of this, and I'm going to walk into this. And if I can do that, then, and the world is struggling with that, and they want help to deal with it. They may not think they want what I have. Well, they think they know what I want to give. They don't know that it's the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And I just don't use religious language.
You know, we mentioned earlier about the takeaway. And I tell you what the takeaway for me from all of this and from reading your book and talking to you is that when it comes to uncertainty, embrace it.
Yeah.
Just embrace it and trust God and lean on him. Let uncertainty and change drive you towards him, not run away from him. And I guess there is comfort in that. There is peace in that if you have a relationship. Now, it'd be interesting. That's how do you explain that to a person who doesn't have God in their life? That seems like that would be a challenge, because what do they run to?
Small challenge.
So what do they run to? You know, let's get back to the man up question.
Okay. All right.
Protocol on that one, but let's go with the U. The U stands for understand. And we're going to make this personal for you. When you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you know better now?
Well, you know, to be honest, when I was a little boy, I was used in a sexual relationship by an older girl who lived next door. And that created a shame base within me, and created a really kind of a broken piece. And I didn't understand myself. I was in, you know, this deep shame was inside of me. So the real, you know, the understanding for me came when I began to be willing to talk about the things that I was terrified of, and to put words to them, and to name them, and to bring them into my relationships, and with God, with my wife, with my son, begin these conversations with my friends. So the understanding came as I was willing to speak about the kind of the shadows of my heart and bring them out into the open, and not letting them define me.
You know, and I'm glad you share that, because Matt, this is our first time meeting. But the listeners out there know, who've been listening to me for a while, that I'm also a survivor of sexual abuse. when I was younger. And I, again, I'm breaking man up protocol again. It almost destroyed my life because I hid in the shadows for over, you're talking about, I guess, over a period of about 19 years before I opened up my mouth about it. How long did your season of darkness last before you decided to open up your
It was when I fell in love with God when I was 20 years old. And when I first, you know, I thought, okay, I got to share this. And then I didn't want to share it. And finally I thought, I got to share this because this is just chewing me up. So yeah, it was when I was 20 that I was in a situation where I thought I got to learn to share this. So that started me on this journey of dealing with issues going on inside of me because I just couldn't handle it anymore.
You know, and I've learned, and your book validates it, that I didn't become fully present, even though I thought I was, until I was able to share that with other people.
That's right.
And you know, what's scary about it, Matt, again, we're getting off on a little tangent here, is that we've had over 400 episodes. Do you know I have yet to get a man to come on to interview about this topic?
Really?
They won't talk to me. I've had women come on the show who we've had some great discussions, but, and I even asked them off air, I said, how come I can't get men to talk? I said, Joe, men are still walking in shame. And so I'm still looking for guests. That should be shocking to our listeners out there to listen to what I'm saying here. So if you know any guests, have them call us, have them email us. I cannot think about how many people live in this country and how many, and I cannot get one man to come on to discuss this issue and talk about it. The fact that you even mentioned it is a blessing to me that you acknowledge to share that with an audience. And who knows, maybe by us putting it out, you say our words have power, me putting it out in the atmosphere, God is going to lead some men to me now who will come on the show.
Amen.
Discuss it.
Amen.
And so let's go with it. Let's end with the last one. The letter is P. I've totally messed up the man up questions, Matt. Going out of order.
That's all right. It's an uncertain world.
That's right. How ironic is that? That's what we're doing. The letter P stands for problem. As a mighty man of God, what is the one problem in your life that you still struggle with today as a man?
Yeah, I understand how to use my gifts, but I don't understand when I don't have the gifts. What do I do with those? So in very practical terms, I recognize that I have certain gifts that I've worked pretty hard to develop and grow in my relationship with God. But this constant struggle is, what do I do in the areas of my life where I don't have gifts, and yet I'm required to be able to step into and lead, and I'm calling out to God and saying, okay, God, how do I lead when I don't have the gift, and how do I create communication with people and create conversations with people when I know I need to do something, but I don't know how to do it, and I don't have a language to draw people in to do it. So that's the vexing of my soul that I have constant conversations with God about.
You know, and it's interesting too that we as men, I think a lot of us struggle with that, and it paralyzes us in moving forward. With our lives. And I think it's going to always be a constant battle, but I think it goes back to earlier what you said before about, if anything, it drives us, and I'm sure it does it with you too, it drives you more towards God, to depend on Him more as opposed to relying on your gifts. Because I know it's at least with me, I do that a lot. It's like, when I'm flowing in my gift, I mean, I forget about God sometimes, and I take it for granted I can do this. But boy, when He puts me in a situation, I'm like, I have no idea what to do, how to handle the situation. Yeah. And you know what's funny about it, Matt? When those situations happen, it is so much better than when I was walking in my gift. It's just amazing. God, it's like God's giving me a whisper, like, I don't need you. I'm just choosing to use you, Joe Martin. Don't ever think that I need you to do this. And so, but I just think that's great. Matt, you did a great job, man. That was awesome. Thanks for being so transparent and honest and vulnerable with us, man. I really appreciate it. And men, can you believe it? We've reached the end of our show that quickly. But don't you worry, we'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest and new insights and new lessons. So please make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to thank my guest, Matt Rawlings, for joining us today, for being so gracious with his time. Matt, thank you so much, man, for gracing us with your presence, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for an opportunity, Joe. It's been a privilege to hang out with you, and I trust God would use you in new ways.
Well, thank you, man. I received that. And Matt, if you quickly for us, if for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about you, your ministry, and the fantastic work that you're doing, even internationally, how could they contact you? What would be the best way?
Well, there's two sites. So my ministry site is called Broken Top Leadership Institute, and I put out a daily devotion that talks about the stuff that I'm working with now. And then my company is called Green Bench Consulting, And they can go to look up Green Bench Consulting or Broken Top Leadership Institute. In either one of those places, they'll find me.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with us, Matt. And what we'll do, we'll put that in the show notes as well. And guys, if you like today's show, please do us a favor. And this is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. Guys, you've made us the number one podcast for Christian men on iTunes. And it's because of you sharing your reviews. Tell us what you think about Matt's show today and how it's touched your heart and how it's enlightened you in different ways. That helps us keep us up in the rankings and more men like you can find us. So please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with Real Men Connect, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.